Welcome to Season 3 of Cult and Culpability. I'm T.A. Newman, your host and keeper. In a moment, we'll rejoin the Priddo family. But first, a reminder that Chaosium's tabletop role-playing game Call of Cthulhu contains mature themes, including cosmic horror, character death, and loss of sanity. If you'd like to become a friend of the Playhouse, then please support us on Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/Miskatonic Playhouse, where you can gain access to exclusive shows and content for as little as £1. And now it's time to pull back the curtain and roll the dice.
In the void. Thomas, you're sitting at this dream tea party. Miss Lambert, the Reverend, Miss Lily Hawthorne, all sitting at the table with your father at the other end. Lord Cosgrove seems to be absent from this little party, but no doubt he'll turn up. He's like a bad penny. Thomas, your father seems to have turned his full gaze on you, his eyes yellowed, one with a brown burst in it. But yet, you know those eyes. You know that judgment. And he stares at you.
I have found you, Father. What more could you want from me?
You hear his voice, Thomas, but you don't see his mouth move. Vengeance.
I think, Father, this might be, for the first time in a long while, something that we both agree on. For too long has Hawthorne and Dunn, but mostly Hawthorne, been terrorizing this town. But now, this is personal. This is a slight on the entire family, Father. But why did you allow yourself to be drawn into it in the first place?
Like all of us protecting you.
Thomas, he seems less genteel now he is talking to you directly. You can see the Reverend is there looking at this page in his hand and also looking at the diary of Lord Matthew Priddo, flicking through, trying to cross-reference any names, any images, anything. You can see the Charlotte is there looking at Miss Lily Hawthorne, trying to gauge her for what she is. Thomas, there is a judgment that is radiating from your father.
You owe this family.
I owe the family nothing. The family owe me. Who do you think has taken your role? Who do you think filled your shoes when you, who disappeared into thin air that New Year's Eve last year? I have been having so much thrust upon me, so much weight on my shoulders. Sure, of course, my uncle has helped, and cast a glance aside towards the uncle. But I, Father, you left us. You owe us.
One of his wet, sloughed, broken, boned fingers slams on the table, which everybody sees, yet nobody knows why, because they're not hearing this conversation. Your lips aren't moving, neither are Adam's, but this slap upon the table is something that is palpable and visible to everybody. And in your head, Thomas, you hear his words, his judgments, in the same way as you were a young man and you would lose money to Cosgrove and he would pay off your debts. That voice resonates in your head.
Ingrate child, I have been watching in your dreams. I know what you this family, you rain down vengeance, you owe me.
Thomas, The two remaining pages in your hands, you find one of them almost moving towards you in your hand, the other moving towards the table. I'm going to ask you for a power roll.
I don't know whether I want to pass this or not. That is a failure, a 66 over 45.
Oh, Thomas. The paper in your hand, in your left hand, that has this weird skull of a monster with fish scales and teeth seems to be moving closer to the table. The one that you presumed to have decoded that would might reference the Father Dagon moves to the flat of the table. The one that you described of having this dragon-like tentacled head moves closer and closer to your face. And your father looks at you. You see his eyes peering over the edge of this page. You hold it close to your face. And he says, only in your head, Thomas.
You make them suffer. Call the great old one. Make them all suffer.
He drops limply to the table, Thomas, and you hear this thud as his skull conks on the table, yet his head looks to you. His brownish yellow eyes look to you, his son, who has failed him time and time again.
I will do this for the family, Father, but I will never do it for you. And Thomas turns, holding the paper.
Thomas, would I be right in thinking that you begin to read this paper?
Oh, absolutely.
Excellent. Thomas, can you give me a power roll, please, as you begin to read this document with the dragon's head with tentacles upon it?
That is a regular success of 25 under 45.
Excellent. Could you please give me your sanity loss as you read this document? And I'm afraid that is going to be a 1d12 plus 3.
Right. So, Newman, Keeper, sir, I have just lost 50% of my remaining sanity in one roll by rolling 8 plus 3. I have 21 sanity to start this session with. I am now down to 10.
Oh, no.
Do we see Thomas's head explode, or is it a gradual process?
You've seen scanners. Wow. It's like that.
Steam comes out of his ears and his brain starts trying to escape his skull.
What you see in this dream is Thomas begins to recite some words. And Reverend, I'm well aware that you are still finding the words to put your particular spell into language, but it's still translating in your head. It's still this blur at the moment. It's almost as if you're looking at these words and they're there and they make sense, but you can't quite see them. The ink has blotted and is moving and ripples, and it's still concocting some sense of form within your mind.
That's Thomas, my brain trying to protect me.
That is your brain trying to protect you, whereas Thomas's brain offers zero protection and almost just rips back any form of, well, as the Reverend said, protection. The bandage comes off in one, and you find, Thomas, that you read these words over and over and over.
In his house at Rulier, dead Cthulhu waits dreaming. Yet upon this dawn, I call upon you, O great old one, to strike down my adversaries as I rejoice in victory and my worship in you. I will offer much in my worship and pray that others who follow my path will make the call of Cthulhu to be humbled by your greatness and majesty. I call upon you, O great and mighty Cthulhu! So, and Thomas sees this great old one as greater than anything his father could have done, and his father means nothing to him anymore. He's just a sad old man who got himself killed. His family comes first, and his family can best be served through service to Cthulhu. And Thomas repeats that mantra under his breath. In his house at Rillier, dead Cthulhu waits dreaming. Yet upon this dawn, I call upon you, O great old one,
Charlotte,
to strike down my adversaries. As
Thomas
I
seems to
victory,
be repeating these words, holding this page in front of him, and as he does, Adam Prida drops to the table, his head clunks on the table, and you hear him laughing.
Oh, Adam, are you all right? You cracked your head. Are you all right, Adam?
And he seems to be throwing something up. He seems to be regurgitating something. But from his mouth, it's almost as if there's something poking through. Something like something's poking. Oh.
Thomas, will you be quiet for just one moment? Your father's in trouble.
Two something's poking through. Oh. And you see that there are these extending tentacles now protruding from Adam's mouth, but he has a smile upon his face as he is... And you see these tentacles crawling from his mouth. Charlotte, Reverend, Hosgrove, what do you do?
Charlotte is about to kind of try and slap Lord Prido on the back because she thinks at first that he's choking on something, but he is not choking, is he?
Where were we?
So Charlotte is just going to walk backwards very slowly with a horrified expression on her face because he's not choking. She thought he was, but he's not. And then she looks towards Lily and looks towards the Reverend and Thomas, who was reciting something that makes no sense whatsoever. But in another way, it makes a terrible kind of sense. She doesn't know how or why, but it does.
The Reverend sees Charlotte backing off, and he'll immediately lunge for the piece of paper, say, "Don't read that out loud, boy, you don't know what it does," and snatch it away.
As you snatch it away, you all hear this mighty cosmic crash. It's almost as if thunder and lightning was born inside this void that you were in. And as it ripples, all of you, Cosgrove, even where you are, you all feel this almighty void quake that you all hear. Yet upon this door, voice upon you, over Thomas's insane ramblings. I will offer much in my words.
Gunne styrmar dosnorfarki.
You all awake in your chairs in the library. Thomas is still repeating these words over and over and over. And over, his eyes wide, almost too wide, stretched beyond as if he is seeing that something that nobody else can see. And yet these words are just being repeated in a cyclical nature, as if this summons, this call, seems to be continuous.
Does he have the paper in his hands as he's reciting it, or has he memorized it?
He has the paper in his hands, but he's not looking at it.
The Reverend will quite sharply shout, "Thomas, be quiet! You don't know what you are saying!" Do we notice Tobias?
You do, and Tobias notices that you're all waking up. You've only just drunk the tea. Is everything okay? Did you see Anastasia?
No, I'm afraid not. But we did see Lily. And she has given us some help. But Thomas here is babbling. And he'll kind of shake Thomas and try and, wave his hand in front of his face and look around for some booze, because that usually brings Thomas round.
You can find, especially in the library, there is a small drinks cabinet. There are drinks there. You can get whatever booze you see fit to try and revive Thomas.
Thomas, drink this, boy. It's good stuff.
Reverend, what is that that the boy's babbling about, that call?
I think it's one of these pieces of paper.
Yes, but no. What is that name he is calling? Who is that he is calling?
Well, I believe he's reciting some call of Cthulhu or some ridiculous notion like that. You know, I don't believe you're supposed to read these things out loud.
Would you say that this... Cthulhu?
Something like that.
Would you say that this Cthulhu is old?
Well, if the texts are correct, this apparently is known as the Great Old One. So, the original, perhaps. I'm not entirely sure.
Marvellous.
I'm unfamiliar with this mythos. I mean, it's certainly not Christian at all. I very much doubt if it's any of the languages I've studied. Have you come across it at all, Cosgrove? You seem quite pleased.
At this point, Cosgrove is completely ignoring the Reverend and trying to memorise the words that Thomas is babbling.
Give me an intelligence roll, please, Cosgrove. And when you ask if Cthulhu is old, even though Thomas's eyes are wide and staring, he actually looks towards you, and as he's saying the words, he's nodding, almost overly nodding, like he knows that this entity is old, beyond time.
I failed that 69 over 55. But if you'd indulge me, I think I want to try to find some way of pushing this.
Okay.
And seeing that the Reverend is going to try to snap Thomas out of this before Cosgrove has had a chance to really absorb what it is that Thomas is repeating, I think he's just going to, just quite rudely, put a hand up and physically hold the Reverend back by putting a hand in his chest and just look around and say, let the boy speak.
Could I also suggest, in pushing this roll, a hand out, holding the Reverend back, Cosgrove, this summons of this mythos entity, the paper is still in Thomas's hand.
Oh, yes.
You could read it out loud yourself if you'd like.
Yes, I suppose I will, and see whether I can absorb it as he is reading it.
Could I ask you to make a power roll, please?
You can ask. The chances are not in my favour. No, that is a dismal failure.
Oh, dear. Then I'm going to ask you for a 1d20, please.
That's 3 points.
Okay, Cosgrove. I have never met a slippery devil quite like Cosgrove before. Cosgrove, I don't know whether it's sheer will of the concoction of a number of factors within your plan that are coming together, or whether there's some other mental faculty that you're able to employ here, but a hand out to the Reverend to push him back, leaning over Thomas, listening to his words, and in time with him saying these words, you read those words. You read them from the spell. And Cosgrove, I am going to ask you to read those words for me.
In his house at Rillier, dead Cthulhu waits dreaming. Yet upon this dawn I call upon you, O great old one, to strike down my adversaries as I rejoice in victory and my worship in you. I will offer much in my worship and pray that others who follow my path will make the call of Cthulhu to be humbled by your greatness and majesty. I call upon you, O great and mighty Cthulhu.
No. What are you doing? Tobias almost kind of jumps at you in this moment.
I just look round at him and smile and say, I am doing what is necessary.
Oh, God. Oh,
no. No, no. Cosgrove, Thomas, stop this at once. You're not doing anything positive here. We've just been into a dream realm. We found the solution to stop Hawthorne. This will destroy everything. Please pull yourselves together and let's work for the good of this town.
We know where the throne is.
We what? Where?
What's the throne? Yes, of course. It's on the ship.
It's on the ship, but it's under the decks.
Under the decks?
Yes.
Cosgrove, have you seen this?
Yes.
No. You seemed quite forceful there. Are you quite well, sir?
Oh, I have rarely been better, my good man.
Very, very well. You see, Tobias, Lord Cosgrove here is working for the good of us. Thomas, can you pull yourself together? We need to get down to the Devonshire and rescue Anastasia.
Before we do so, there is something I need to discuss with you. There is a pretext that we need in order to gain the trust of Lords Hawthorne and Dunn and place them at a disadvantage.
Yes, you apparently see, I need to baptize you or something.
Yes, precisely. They are expecting me to bring you down there to conduct this blasphemous ceremony. So what I would suggest is you just play along while we put all the other pieces in place. This will convince them that we are there as allies and friends and make their betrayal and ultimate destruction that bit easier.
I think a ruse like that will be very useful. I just wish I'd have been able to speak to Miss Lily a moment longer. I would have asked her something we could possibly have used to say to Hawthorne to distract him at a vital moment. But indeed, we must make a way. Tobias.
Yes.
We have the location of the throne. Cosgrove, were you actually on the ship? Did you see this throne that Charlotte has described her dream?
Yes.
Did you see anything else down there?
It's there in the same room as the egg.
Is Anastasia there?
Yes, she is.
Goodness me.
You knew she was there.
If I had revealed this earlier, before we had learned everything that we needed to strike effectively, I fear young Thomas and perhaps yourself would have run down there like two overeager schoolboys and got us all killed. So you will forgive me if I hold back certain vital bits of information for the common good.
Yes, I hate to say it, Reverend Charlotte, Thomas, but Lord Cosgrove is right. We need to fool my father. He can't know that we're acting against him. Otherwise, he'll have us killed there and then.
Well, we shall acquiesce to his requests of some sort of baptism. I'm not entirely sure quite what this is like. Cosgrove, I has baptized one person and saw the... Now, I'm not going to use the phrase. I have seen the creature in the egg, and it made some sort of connection. So be prepared. You may have some sort of connection with the egg when I do the old blessing thing. I hope Marsh is going to be there. I can't really remember how it goes.
Reverend, this is the other part of the plan. I would take it as a personal kindness if... I'm sure that you, as a man of the cloth, are well-versed in all manner of ecclesiastical rites and perform them without a stumble in the past. But I would take it as a personal kindness if, on this occasion, you were perhaps somewhat less efficacious than usual. I would rather the baptism were not complete. I fear the lords do not have my best interests at heart, and I fear that I would lose more by this transaction than I would gain. So if we can perhaps offer the pretense of the baptism, then then that may be enough to assuage them while we work against them.
Very well. I shall look for a way to doctor the ceremony, and if the opportunity presents, I shall take Marsh aside, just in case he has to do the honours. But we shall watch over you, Cosgrove. We are all in this together. We must see the safety of this town and these people. Thomas, are you with us now? Does Thomas look with it, or do we need to get Harris along and maybe put him to bed with some warm milk?
Thomas, give me a power roll, and you need to get an extreme success.
I'll just ring for the butler.
So Thomas got a 36 under 45, which is a regular success. I could spend all my luck to make that an extreme, but I don't think I will.
Could he perhaps get a bonus die because Cosgrove, I think losing patience with his babbling, was about to give him a hearty slap across the face.
Does he give him a hearty slap across the face?
He absolutely does.
Then I think there's a bonus die in there.
We'll add a bonus onto that. That is an 86. You knocked all the sense out of him, what little remained. Thanks, Cosgrove.
But you knock some other kind of sense into him. And Thomas, you are continuing to repeat this summons that you seem to have stumbled upon.
For heaven's sake, Thomas, look, drink this, boy. Drink this.
And Thomas, you are able to drink, and you do almost, as you're reading this summons, it's almost as if you're reading it with this, you are trying to carry meaning of other words. It appears that these are the only words that you're able to say. But when the Reverend says, Thomas, are you ready? It might be that you're actually kind of inferring, yes, I'm ready. But all you're able to say is to strike down my adversaries as I rejoice in victory and worship you. Unfortunately, you can't communicate anything other than these words.
And is he repeating these words?
Over and over and over and over. Sometimes it's a whisper to himself, sometimes out loud, sometimes as he's staring into the distance. Sometimes you might get a moment where he seems rather lucid and you ask him a question like you just have, but then he'll reply to you with some of these words. I call upon you, O great and mighty Cthulhu, whatever that means.
Thomas, you have to stop, otherwise we're going to have to take some extreme action with you, boy.
In his house.
Have a drink for him.
Reverend
yes,
Cosgrove.
Upon this dawn.
Miss Lambert, please, go to the carriage. I'll bring Thomas.
Good. And Tobias, if you need to, Just persuade him rather forcefully to take a nap. Then
Thomas,
we understand it.
Come on. It's your sister. It's for Anastasia. Come on now. And he kind of puts his arm around his waist and hoiks him up and begins kind of walking him out. And he's like, come on, please. My mother and Lady Dan, they've gone. They've gone to prepare for the baptism.
Oh, goodness me. Thank goodness I called
upon you.
Oh, for heaven's
great
sake.
Great old one.
Yes, Thomas, of course.
You just strike down, Thomas says, pointing towards the coach.
Yes.
My adversaries, as I rejoice in victory and my worship to you.
The Reverend would like to grab his staff, pull on his coat, look up at the painting of Lord Matthew Prideaux, give him, point the finger at him and go, this ends today, good sir, and almost waves his staff.
Tobias does point back at the table as you say that and just says, the book, don't forget the book.
Very well. He'll nip over to the book and grab all three pieces of paper, making sure he's got all three, and the diary.
Thomas.
Can I just point out at the moment that Thomas is currently in shirt and breeches, no stockings, no shoes, after he came out of a pond and hasn't a chance to change. Possibly still with a pistol tucked down the back of his trousers.
That is fantastic. And I have no doubt that when we find the rest of society, there will be a fashion roll. I have a feeling the entire group may need to make some level of composure roll at some point. But as you point that out, and as Tobias points at the library table as you're all leaving and says, the book, Miss Lambert, can you give me a power
yes.
roll?
Ooh, this omen's
not
ill.
Charlotte as well.
Yes, Charlotte as well. 63 against 55.
Oh, Charlotte. As you climb into the carriage, you're able to sit yourself in a corner. These are rather large, luxurious carriages. The Reverend and Cosgrove seem to sit at one side discussing their machinations about falsifying the baptism of Cosgrove. Thomas sits in between you and them, and let's be honest, he's a rather significant distraction at the moment, talking about something about worship and an offering and greatness, the majesty of something called Cthulhu. But Charlotte, you can't help but feel that paper in your pocket. You can't help but feel that story that is your life on paper. Can I ask you what your power roll was, please?
That was 63 against 55, so that's a failure.
Then you have no choice but to pull out the next entry and read.
Oh, that's a good idea, Charlotte. Yes, yes. Read him a part of your story. Calm the boy. Calm the boy.
Oh, I don't think you'd approve of this one, Reverend. This is quite different to some of my earlier works.
Not any more of that steamy stuff I heard you reading the other night. Was that this morning? Oh, gosh, it's all confusing. Please read anything to pull his mind away from that silly incantation. Thomas, be quiet.
Very well, if you're sure.
Please do.
And Charlotte smooths out the piece of paper on her lap, and she begins to read. Waking up cold and feeble upon the floor of his room, he forced the words and images of the vision to the back of his mind. This force of will was so extraneous, he fell back and tried to catch himself on the corner of his bed. He missed and hit the floor, realizing the bed was not where it should be. The bed was on the other side of the room. Jonas used this confusion, coupled with his fear, to pull himself from the floor and look at his surroundings. It was as he had feared. The bed was not where it was supposed to be. It was on the other side of the room, and so was the door, so was the washbowl, and so was the mirror. The mirror, he thought. Running to it, he could see himself, his other self, his reflection, standing with its back to him. His reflection was using a towel to wipe his arms free of something, and it was in that moment, as Jonas watched his other self ritualistically clean, that he saw the bodies of three wealthy-looking gentlemen lying on the floor of his room. "Oh my God, what have you done?" Jonas called from his reflected side of the mirror. The reflection, now in Jonas's world, spoke without turning. "To live as a god among men, life must end to begin again." "But you can't! I won't allow it!" Jonas shouted and slammed his fist into the mirror. The reflection turned to face Jonas and revealed that he was covered in the blood of the gentleman and was in the process of wiping himself clean. "You wanted to be strong and you wanted to be better. Never forget that you are now my debtor." Jonas stepped back in shock as he saw that the reflection was a perfect specimen of the man he wanted to become. Even glistening with blood, this man stood with the grace of a god, and he was in awe of him. Then he saw his eyes, or the lack of them.
Charlotte, you read this, this transformative tale of Jonas. And you can't help but see your own story in his life, in his interaction with his own reflection. And you feel this reflected life that you have lived. A Lambert, a widow, a cousin of the Prideaux, never anything important. You're a dun. And you've got an opportunity, Charlotte, to be a dun. You've got an opportunity to not be with this rabble who rage against the tide of what could be great, what could be godhood. Your family, Charlotte, your people, they're aligned with Hawthorne. They are a part of this new beginning that may be born of blood, but at least they will be born. Charlotte, you have a choice. You don't have to side with these family who pretend. There's an opportunity here. When you arrive at the HMS Devonshire, there's a decision to be made. What's Charlotte thinking?
Charlotte is feeling incredibly torn right now. This whole strange scene in this void. They've all gone mad, clearly. But the dead who were there in the void were rotting. They were rotting and they were broken, but Philippe, he's not like that. Philippe has managed to come back to her world, to this world, to the real world, to the waking world. And he's not a ghost, he's there. Well, he's not there right now, but he comes and he goes as he always did. And he thinks she has to make a choice and to make the right choice. He's been guiding her this whole time, thinking that she ought to be a dun. She's a queen, he says. And she is so very torn to take that step. But on the other hand, there's Anastasia. Anastasia, who's always been so sweet and so kind. And even Thomas and even the Reverend, lately, over the last couple of days, they found some kind of connection, the three of them. She's never felt that close to either Thomas or to George before, but suddenly now she does. And what a horrible choice it's going to be.
Charlotte, your thoughts on Philippe, him not being dead, but being there. Can you give me an occult roll, but I'm going to give you a bonus die.
Okay. I think I've got quite a good occult. Oh, that would be a regular success of 13 against 25. But with a bonus, let's see if I can improve that any. Oh, no, that would have been the same. 13 against 25, regular it's success.
Destined. It's destined. The occult die. It was predetermined by some preternatural force, Charlotte. You are convinced, Charlotte, that if you choose to be a dun, the powers that Hawthorne controls, he will be able to properly bring Philippe back to you. If he is to make himself a god, surely this will be within his power. So now you have a scales balancing before you. On one side, you have the Duns, the Hawthorns, and the promise of Philippe. On the other, you have the Prudos. With Anastasia, with the babbling Thomas, with the Reverend, who tries so hard to convince you that you're a part of the family. And I'd like you to see where these scales balance over the next few moments of your existence. But I'm going to ask you for a power roll, Charlotte, as you finish reading that last chapter of The Crimson Kiss.
Okay. Ah, true to form, that's a failure. Oh, 57 against 55.
Then you cannot help but continue to read the next extract of The Crimson Kiss, the penultimate extract of The Crimson Kiss.
And Charlotte takes the next piece of paper and reads it aloud again. The shimmering red eyes had gone. What was left was a sight too unbearable to behold. Jonas threw his gaze down to the washbowl in front of him as he was confronted with the truth of the sight of the man he wished to be. Jonas's eyes were shimmering red, blazing like a fire in winter raging against the southern wind. Both the washbowl before him and the others on the far side of the mirror were full of water. The water before him, as clear as crystal, showing him what he had become. The bowl he had left in the world before had tainted liquids. Blood swirled in the water as two white boys bobbed against each other. The eyes that he had once fused this unrelenting world with had been plucked from their station and left adrift. Jonas forced his gaze back upon his reflection and saw that in his eyes' stead were fleshy maws, cavernous pits, ripped and torn muscle. The reflection smiled at Jonas and began taking the cleanest items of the collected gentleman's clothing as he spoke. As I go about my day, I forget you in every way. I leave with one last thought. It is the misery that you have brought. You saw this world with eyes so dead. Now you see the world in red. You were meant for so much more. You let your weakness open a door. I will not waste this life or boon. I will not let us accept your doom. Now, lord or lady, I'll get to wed, no longer stuck to that bed. Take my place, you will indeed. Worship me, and let me feed.
Reverend Cosgrove, you're hearing Miss Lambert read this folktale to Thomas. Thomas mumbling away at his ongoing summons.
What is that that you're reading, Miss Mrs. Lambert?
And this is my great work, Lord Cosgrove. It's called The Crimson Kiss.
And it is allegorical?
Perhaps. I think that's yet to be decided. I think the final chapter will probably tell me that.
Certainly is a cautionary tale, your telly there, Charlotte. All that glitters isn't gold, and be careful what you wish for and everything like that. Wedding, marriage and things like that. Kind of reminded me of that crackpot Mr. Jenkins at parts. Maybe some poor fate has befallen that chap and he finds himself driven by what he thought he wanted, when in actual fact he should have just settled with the old politeness and society and good old hard work. There are no shortcuts in this life. What is the past? It's the past.
Cosgrove snorts to himself and looks out the window.
The carriage trundles along.
Well, perhaps there can be. There's one more page. Would you like to hear the ending?
Are we there yet? I think we have time, don't we?
You find yourself now in the carriage as Cosgrove looks out the window and chortles to himself that you're actually riding through the town. You can see the red mist bathing the buildings, almost rippling away out of the way through your carriage. Thomas mumbling to himself, but you're not there yet.
Well, please do, Charlotte. Let's finish it off and hear how the tale ends, and hopefully, if it's a proper fairy tale, there should be a slightly happy ending, but not quite what you expect.
Ah, yes, a happy ending for all of us. Isn't that what we're always promised? And she takes the final piece of paper and reads it. Jonas screamed at the mirror from this backwards world as his reflection placed a pair of glasses from one of the dead gentlemen upon his nose. Please, you can't leave me. You're stealing my life. You're killing me. The reflection dipped its finger in the bloody water and smeared the lenses of its glasses to hide its missing eyes. It dipped another finger and drew a shape upon the mirror. Waves at the bottom, with an anchor rising up into three circles above, all within one greater circle containing its hidden meaning. The reflection walked to the door, opened it, then paused to turn back before setting into the world beyond. I'm not killing you. Far from it. I'm living for you. For a bit. Jonas's reflection smiled, turned, and walked from the room. It left his other self screaming from behind a mirror, wishing in every way that he had lived his life, that he had made those that were better than him listen and take note, as he had no doubt that his reflection wouldn't waste a minute in apologizing for his existence. Jonas slumped to the floor, knocking the washbowl from beneath the mirror, and looked at his backwards room. He looked at the door leading out into the wider reflected world, and wondered what the world would look like if everything was reflected. The end.
Bravo, Charlotte. I do like that. That's very exciting. That puts the reader in what they would be like if they were, how they might live their life again. And I do like the contemporaneous of putting that description in, like we've got here in Kingscombe. Gosh, that's very, very well done, Charlotte. I would buy a copy of that.
He doesn't sound condescending at all, does he? Not in the slightest bit. Well done, young lady.
Charlotte can't help but resonate with that final line. He wonders what the world would look like if everything was reflected. If he wasn't who he was, if he was someone else, what would the world be like if things were different? I'm going to stop sowing that seed with you, Charlotte, because I feel like it may have embedded, and I'll allow you to see whether the sun shines on that particular seed and whether it grows or not. The carriage rolls to the front of Kingscombe and arrives at the bay. The horses, you hear them pulled. The carriage comes to a stop. There is a jolt in the carriage. Thomas continues to ramble his madness. Reverend, it's in that moment where you praise this story that words begin to form in your head. Whether you say them out loud, it's completely up to you, but words begin to make sense. You recognize the similarity in these words to what Thomas is saying. Do you say them out loud?
The Reverend is going to resist because he is not wishing to be, as was read in the diary, a wizard of any sort. And he's beginning to think these supernatural forces are forces that no man should be partaking in. And Thomas has sadly been afflicted by this, so he will resist his urge and probably think of some lovely hymn inside his head, all things bright and beautiful, as he'll step outside the carriage, call up to Adrian, the coach driver, said, "Hey, Adrian, Master Thomas will be staying in the coach just for a few moments. He's, you've been around the family enough. You know Master Thomas does like his drink, and I don't want him to make a bit of a scene. I mean, by all means, entertain him, but if you can keep him quiet, that would be jolly useful. You see, we have an engagement upon the boat, Adrian. I mean, what do you make of this, young man? What's the word about the staff? What are they saying about this boat?
I don't really rightly know, sir. I mean, if I'm waiting with Master Thomas, do you mind if I wait inside the carriage? This red mist in that, it's I don't really like it, sir. Do I need to wait here? Can I take the carriage back to the manor, sir?
I do believe we might need Master Thomas for, of course, I'm terribly sorry. Yes, if you wouldn't mind waiting here, we may need a swift exit back to Prideaux Manor, just in case, just in case.
Oh, you're very good, sir. All right, well, I'll be in here with Master Thomas then.
Cosgrove, did you need anything from the coach at all getting down?
Well, I am rather wondering whether it might not be better to bring young Lord Thomas with us. You see, obviously, while he's in his current state, he is even more of a babbling idiot than usual. But at the same time, he is, I think, think something of an epicenter for some of the factors that we need to bring into play. He is very strongly connected to both his father and his mother, both of whom in their changed states have taken a very active interest in affairs. And I fear by leaving him behind, we are perhaps losing our connection to them.
Ah, you do make a good point. Best keep our eye on him. Yes.
Is it okay? I've got him. Tobias starts literally hoiking Thomas out. And Thomas, can you give me a...
Babble roll?
Go with a sanity roll, please. But you're going to need a penalty die.
So that is a... First is a 28 over 10, but you never know what the penalty die gives me. An 88 over 10. This is a failure. Oh,
you're not really able to help with that. You're almost just kind of flailing and pointing at things that aren't there and eyes wide, talking this incantation to things. But Tobias,
yes, upon this dawn, I call upon you. Oh, great.
Right, Thomas, I'm taking you out of the carriage. We've got to get there.
To strike down my adversaries as I rejoice.
Very good, Thomas. Come on now.
I will offer much in my worship and pray that others who follow my...
And Tobias is able to wrangle Thomas out of the carriage and hoik him over his arm. So he's kind of got him and he's able to kind of almost kind of walk him towards. So there's no sense of compass mentis. There's no sense of ceremony, but Tobias is hoiking him. As Cosgrove would suggest, he might appear to be the epicenter of some upcoming event. So bringing him towards or with the group. And everybody moves down towards the beach. Please, Reverend.
The Reverend looks at Adrian and says, well, Adrian, looks like you've had a lucky escape. What I'd ask you to do is head back to Pridda Manor and give a message to Harris. Should he hear the church bells ring, dig out the pole arms. It's a little joke, but if you hear the church bell rings, make sure you get everybody inside the manor, close up the doors. I have a feeling, Adrian, this red mist make it worse before it gets better. So head back to the manor. Like I say, if you hear those church bells ring, you shore up the mansion and make sure everyone stays safe.
Very good, sir. And thank you. I muchly appreciate it. Right.
Good luck to you, well. Sir.
Good luck to you too now. And good luck. Goodbye. And he kind of whips.
Blimey, that horse can move.
Yeah. And with a certain rapidity, he is out of there with the carriage going back up the main street of Kingscombe.
Never seen a wheel spin on a wagon before.
All the way through the town. You can't even see it, but you know that within some relatively quick time that he's made it through the town, he's across the bridge, across the river that separates the town from Pridda Manor. And he is very quickly approaching Pridda Manor to go and tell Harris to get the pole arms and whatever else might happen. You find yourselves, you merry band of, well, dare I say, investigators, at the edge of the beach. You see before you the HMS Devonshire, with this illuminating red glow piercing through some of the broken cracks in the wooden frame of this shipwreck, pushing through, piercing beyond the ship. There is a almost a perimeter guard around this ship of lobotomized merrows, standing still, painfully still. But what's different is that none of the spectators, Lady Hawthorne, Lady Dunn, they don't seem to be on the outside of the ship anymore. But there are a few unexpected extra bodies. You see other merrows lying on the floor. I'm going to ask you for a spot hidden, Reverend Cosgrove and Charlotte. Thomas, I'm afraid this doesn't really your peripherals at this perhaps significant time.
That is a success for the Reverend. 41 versus 43.
Yes, and a success for Cosgrove too.
A hard success for Charlotte of 22 against 44.
With your successes, you see quite clearly that the marrows lying on the floor, these, and you've heard them mentioned as deep ones, also as marrows, but these amphibian-like fish humanoid creatures, you see a number of them lying in the sand of the beach on the shore, almost as if they've come from the ocean up towards the HMS Devonshire. You can see a number of bodies slashed and eviscerated, torn apart, lying on the ground. Some, clearly, with their skull intact. Some, clearly, with their skull opened, peeled apart with metal rods in. It appears that some of the marrows have had conflict with some of the lobotomized marrows. But it's in that moment, as you're looking down the beach, that you see the silhouette of a figure walk out onto the deck of the HMS Devonshire and call out to you.
Ah, it's about time you arrived, Cosgrove, and I see you have brought me a reverend. Now that is what I call a commitment to the faith.
Yes, yes, they can be a bit bothersome to get hold of, but I am glad to report that I've managed to procure one.
Well, as much as I appreciate your efforts, you weren't the only one to have a level of success.
And Lord Hawthorne turns to his right, and as he does, you see this rather large, overbounding, muscled individual with a man upon his shoulder step forward, and you all see Jenkins as he lifts Reverend Marsh into the air with one hand and says,
Lord Cosgrove, I got you your reverend. I do believe it's time for your baptism of faith.
Thank you for joining us for Cult and Culpability. Remember, you can find us at www.miskatonicplayhouse.com, and you can also visit the main stage for other scenarios from the Miskatonic Playhouse, with links in the show notes below. Don't forget to like and subscribe to our channel, and support us on Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/Miskatonic Playhouse. Where you can access exclusive shows and content for as little as £1. But if you can spare a minute to leave a review, it makes a huge difference to other like-minded listeners who will be able to find and enjoy our work. Until next time, when the curtain rises again.